Shalom and welcome to Product Nation, a weekly podcast by product managers in Silicon Valley covering how tech products get created and executed by some of the most accomplished product experts in the world. I'm Ofer Barav, and today with me and my co-host Nir Paz, we welcome Lior Hakim. Nir, ma koreh?
Fires, pandemic, everything's possible. We're just missing the volcano, but other than that,
and the earthquake. I can't think of much more than that, but those two things would just definitely complete the picture. So any good Netflixes?
Well, recently I watched The Social Dilemma, which is basically a documentary about some people that work for different tech companies in the Bay and then basically, I don't know, developed a conscience or something. They left, they talk about it, about what these companies are actually trying to do, which is basically change your behavior. So we spend as much time as possible in apps. It's pretty interesting. The only thing that this documentary does not discuss is the social dilemma, which is kind of weird. There is no dilemma there. There is a problem, some recommendations. Interesting. I won't say much. It's a very charged topic here in the Bay Area. Are these companies good? Or are they bad? Is it good for us? Bad for us? So lots of opinions.
Well, okay.
Recommend.
I'll definitely have to check it out. Hi, Leo. Where are you based?
I'm based in Tel Aviv, in Israel, working from here.
Tell us something fun.
Fun. Actually, I was water skiing this last weekend in the Sea of Galilee, which was amazing. It was my first time. And I actually, after only two times I crashed, I got up and just skied away.
So Jesus walked, but you skied.
We have a nice boat with a couple of friends and having a nice weekend. Was amazing.
And you have blue skies and fresh air. Nir and I, we don't remember what that looks like. What is that movie that people, it's some movie that
depicts... Blade Runner.
Blade Runner. Have you seen that tweet? Oh my God. It's like that here for the most part. It's pretty sad. But yeah, that's so good to hear that some people still enjoy blue sky somewhere out there in the world. Great. Well, let's get started. And Neil, can you tell us about yourself and what got you here?
Sure. So I'm coming from a background of math and physics, both industrial design. I work on eToro, which is an Israeli unicorn. I write a famous white paper on blockchain, which is called Coral Coins, where I got afterwards to cloud infrastructure, and then from there to deep learning and building Hour One, which you're going to talk about today.
Great. Yeah, well, let's just jump right in. And what's Hour One? If you could tell us about how you got here, some of the struggles you had in the beginning.
Sure. So Hour One is my company and my friend's company, which is Oren Aharon, is the CEO and I'm the CTO. It is actually the leading trusted provider of synthetic media, which means we're creating videos of character of real life people from text. And we actually met each other from a common friend, which we both were working on. Oren was a VC at the time, investing in his company. And I was just helping with some project, AI project. And we were both bugging him. And he said, well, you better bug each other because you seem to be a good fit. And from then we founded the company and actually just doing videos of real people, which actually look real, but actually not saying the words that are coming out of the mouth, which is generated with GANs and other deep learning networks.
Okay. And so that's synthetic media and that's GANs or generative adversarial networks. Talk to us about the road into the so-called product market fit, which is so difficult for any entrepreneur.
Definitely. So, of course, the beginning was hard. Actually, the technical aspect came really fast and we had an amazing demo to go with investor and was super excited about. But then we actually reached to meet some of the VCs. It acted really hard on us because we had this mesmerizing demo of people saying things that they didn't know or of the investors themselves if they give us their video. And then they thought it's a gimmick and it's a little bit fired back at us when they try to think, where is the business? And we were sure there's the business, and actually we're demonstrating now, but it was very hard to convince them at the beginning.
Very quick intro. Basically, you have what's called actors. These are people that agree to essentially be used as a synthetic robot or synthetic person on video. If I wanted to be an actor, I would go to your site. I would volunteer. I would sign off that I'm enabling that.
Yeah, they get okay. Paid. They work. Okay.
right. And then I would record myself for a period of time, maybe 10, 20 minutes. The system would learn everything about me, all my subtleties, all my outliers, I guess. And it would then enable another person to take text and convert it into any video that they want using my character. Is that just about right?
Yes, that's about right. So people are basically being uploaded to their digital character is being uploaded to our repository, and we have a repository of people then we offered for commercial use, basically.
So just in the way of an example, I know that's not a business use case right now that you have, but in theory, I put a text, and if Neil put a text, and if you put a text, and each one of us had a character that we designated, we could form a conversation like a podcast that we're having right now that was pre-scripted. Is that right? And to an external person, presumably it wouldn't seem like it was synthetic. It would seem like it was the real deal.
Definitely. In video. So you can actually see us speaking the words that we just written.
So talk to us now about how you're navigating that treacherous road of finding a business case. As you mentioned, you came to a VC and they loved the presentation, but they weren't convinced about the business case. Talk to us about that.
So of course, first thing we thought when we had the technology to generate those videos of people, we thought we're going to do marketing. Of course, the first thing you think when you think video, you're going to do commercials. And this is what we've done. And actually, it wasn't that big of a hit. I mean, the commercial itself have a lot of things related to creative and design and placement and stuff like that. But then slowly we understand that our product is actually enabling video product and enabling new interfaces. And then we've turned more to what you can say product enablement. And now with all COVID and everything is happening, a lot of businesses moving online, and businesses that have in their culture delighting their customers and want more than a text-based website and want video experience for the customers come to us with a large text corpus, and we actually convert it to video and give them a video experience for their customers.
But how did you arrive at that? Because that sounds more like a conclusion. What kind of tests have you noticed that proved to you that your hypothesis was indeed in the right direction?
So we started in e-commerce after... We think about commercials, then we did more product marketing and things that are actually complementary to the product. So not advertisement, but for example, if you have an e-commerce site and you have a product page and then you have the specs, but people don't want to read the specs, although they want to see something about the product. So sometimes they'll go to YouTube and see reviews of the product and stuff like that. But we can actually give the e-commerce the power to have his specs actually spelled out in video, so people just get into the product page and watch them. And from the first test we did, we see a significant uplift in sales just by having those videos there in the product page. Explain about the video and giving a more personal experience. So it's not just a moving slideshow, but an actual person that we've tested that is delivering the product information. And this is unique to each product.
Can you take us back to that day before e-commerce surfaced for you? Yeah. Is it one of those things where you're going on a roadshow, you're talking to investors and somebody says, hey, but what about e-commerce? And then you go, oh yeah, let's go test it out. Or did it come out in a different way? And also, how did you actually convince some of the first people to try it? And how quickly was it from concept to confirmation?
So it took some time. And first, of course, we tested in small batches. So people were very open to test it, and we didn't take a lot of money to do the POC. And you said, you just embed this to the site. We did the hosting, we did everything, the analytics for them. You just embed the video in your site and see how it works on a test set. And then you compare the results and see if it works for you. This is how we started with e-commerce. Before e-commerce, I think we did a little things where we did some tested in news and stuff like that. But we ended up doing more and more e-commerce.
A quick question about e-commerce specifically. Where do you actually embed the video? At which stage as a customer? When I think about the customer flow diagram, where will I encounter the video as a customer? I log in, or maybe when I create a login, or when I'm looking for something, or what would be my interaction with video?
So when we think about it, we think that video is somewhere along the line of intrusive and immersive access. So as you become more and more immersive, you're more and more intrusive to the experience of the client because you have audio, visual. We call it a shallow mindset and a deep mindset. So if you're browsing search results or going through a lot of listings, you don't want a video bugging you. You just want information, digest this information. But when you go deeper and deeper after you search and after you go into the product page, you're interested in the product itself and you want to know now, you're in a deep mindset, you're concentrated, you're watching pictures, you want to see more angles, you want to see the connection of the laptop or whatever you think, you're ready to get into this immersive experience to get the information. So this is where we try to delight the customer, or where the customer is at a deep mindset.
Let's try it. I mean, right now I have a set of headsets, Bose to be exact, and the little pads on the side got deteriorated. I need to replace the pads. I've been looking for the past few days for a replacement. I've seen many websites. I've seen stuff you have on Amazon, but also stuff you have on Bose website itself. And they have a bunch of products. So I came in, obviously they offer you speakers, headphones, all these stuff, until I dove deeper into accessories and replacement parts. And then I got to the list of items that I'm really interested in. So at this point, you're saying when I click the product that I want, this is where I actually see a video that gives me a little bit more data or explanation?
So this can be one solution. This is actually, you're touching on a really interesting point, because we think because of the opportunities that are coming of video and because we're actually generating video from text, you can actually select a few options and compare mm-hmm. them and get a video that compares them if you're in that deep mindset. But the video interfaces do not exist yet. And this is exactly right. What we are creating. The fundamental change of how you perceive those deep mindset and get them in video. So if you can generate a text of comparing those products, we can generate a video that is actually a video on YouTube comparing those products for you.
Yeah, that will be a great solution for something that I'm doing, because this is exactly what I'm doing. I'm trying to understand what are the difference between the different pads. And right now I have an answer, right? But until then, you look at tables, you look at comparison videos for different companies, different manufacturers. So yeah, that's actually really interesting, creating a video of comparison for products.
Yeah, so it's very interesting just that the actual companies that we work with, they discover new ways of doing things with video, because it doesn't have to be on a certain page. It can be on a conversion page. And we are actually agnostic to this. So we try to help our customer understand the possibility that are incorporated in the video product. And then they just have to send us text and they get those videos.
Got it.
So I was wondering if we can switch talking a little bit about the technology. You came into a world that is turning heavily towards machine learning. Can you talk to us about some of the challenges in this world and how you were able to sort of get ahead of the pack in terms of your success?
Yes. So the field is growing really fast. Deep learning and GANs, as you mentioned earlier, is growing really fast and advancing really fast. And new architecture are coming up. Research is exploding. And actually, when we're trying to take those types of ideas and create commercial products, it's really about creating it very scalable and robust. So it's not a single cherry-picked example. And to get those ideas robust, you have to run many experiments in the cloud. And how we do this is actually by using, for example, spot instances on AWS, which is a lot cheaper and enable us to run much more experiments and fine-tune those new networks to an extent they are extremely stable and get stable results for production use.
And in terms of going more and more towards the Turing effect, so you and I had a conversation slightly prior to this, and you mentioned that for the most part, users can't tell the difference between synthetic and real. How did you get to those subtleties? These aren't so obvious. I mean, it probably takes a lot of fine-tuning. How long did it take you to get there? How difficult is it?
It's actually very difficult, and we are always improving. And the test you're talking about is actually a game that we ran during CES. So we put on a big screen and we let people discriminate actually between real and synthetic characters. And they actually got to around 60%, which means they couldn't tell the difference when selecting between real and synthetic. The process is an ongoing process. And we have artifacts and other things we have to at scale. Customers send us text and we have to deliver on those texts. So what we do is actually building the infrastructure so we have variations, for example, of the same text of the videos we generate. So if a text, if we have, for example, we have methods of testing if one video failed in production, and then we can generate another one from a different checkpoint.
Let me try to ask it from a different angle, because and I'll show what I'm sort of struggling with in my own head right now. So there's two things going on here. One is your need as a startup to focus, and you mentioned very clearly it's e-commerce, but in theory, as long as you state in the disclaimer of exactly where you can't use it, let's say politics and deepfake and all that kind of stuff, but as long as it's for commercial use cases, you could in theory just make it open and let people like myself who are doing podcasts use this technology. We're willing to pay. You're a startup. You need to grow. Why not? You could put the pricing schedule right on your site and allow people to just come. Everyone could use some portion of this technology versus the other side, which so here is go-to-market and navigation and focus versus the other side, which is from a technology perspective. I still don't understand what I don't want to mention by name, but there's a service that I use that does claim for podcasting, that does claim to allow you to put things in your voice. If you put text in, it'll say things in my voice. So if I miss something in this episode and I want to insert it, I could. But frankly, I haven't been using that feature because it's just not good. And some of the best minds are working on that. So the question is, have you noticed maybe that e-commerce is perfect because you can't have a complex conversation between, let's say, three people that have their avatars talk, and that therefore you just need something that's very short and clipped and 20, 30 seconds is good enough, and therefore e-commerce is where you're focused? Like, can you talk about where technology constraints meet GTM?
Yes. So first of all, e-commerce is where we started. And of course, we're now doing e-learning and HR hiring and stuff like that. And of course, the length of the video has a great effect on the quality, because like I said, if you will need to generate another video, if you need to generate 2 hours of video again and again, it's much more costly. And then if when we were
both... Explain that for a second. What do you mean costly?
I mean, to put a machine and then generate a longer video, it's harder. Yeah, I mean, you have more chances to get artifacts. In 2 hours and 30 seconds.
I see. Yeah, you're not talking about costly. Price-wise, you're saying the cost to the system of going wrong. Yeah. You're saying people will perceive it synthetic.
The probability of having some glitch in the system or something is going wrong, and then you have to solve it, of course. Although it doesn't happen so much, but if you have to deliver 100% of the request, so the length has a lot of impact on the end product. Thanks
for
the video.
I'm still stuck. Again, some of the best minds that I know are working on a certain product. I can't even get 10 seconds of myself to sound like myself. How are you able to get 30 seconds clips or 1 minute clips or even longer to work in video even, not just audio, so good? What are some of the complications you had to think through or work through that made you break away from the pack?
Yeah, so our quality is definitely achieved by the number of compute you do and the number of experiments we run to tune those networks to perfection. And not perfection, well, it's an ongoing process, but to a high quality state. And we actually build a very smart and lean infrastructure when we can use those free machines floating in the cloud very cheap. And actually, another infrastructure that is used, because those machines are in high demand in the various regions in the world, for example, we constantly check where is the free machines that are now floating, and we can grab them and use them and continue running our research. And then once we run a ton of research and tune those networks, we can move into production, actually, and use those tuned networks to production. Just to touch on another point, that we also reduce the freedom of the parameters in our system, like the degrees of freedom. So we know our characters. We have a degree of control on the characters, and we have a degree of control of the inputs, because we know, for example, in e-commerce, we know what types of text they're going to use in integration. So it's not out there in the wild yet. And we actually getting all this data help us to improve the system so we can put it to anyone to use. So this is actually what we're building, but we're just using less degrees of freedom at this stage so we can open the system later.
So in the system that I've used before, I've had to read 10, 15 minutes worth of text, and then it did the compute, and then it spat out what purportedly was my synthetic voice from here on. And I said, it wasn't great, not even close. In your case, are you dealing with, instead of 10, 15 minutes, are you dealing with hours and hours of reading to perfect that? Or are you still just taking a short clip from the actor and then somehow you're processing it differently?
No, so when we generate voice, we actually do use a lot of time of voice. And what we
do... What does that mean a lot? What does that mean a lot? Because 10 didn't work for the other company. So for you, what?
Yeah, no, it's a few hours. But then you don't necessarily get the natural voice of the face that you see. We match voices and we can tune a bit those voices to match with the faces.
So, the video is different than the voice. Is the video longer or shorter then?
The video capture is actually around 20 minutes. So if you wanna come on the system and get paid for your face, it's just about a 20 minutes process, and we shorten it. It's gonna be 6 minutes.
Somehow, when it comes to humans perceiving if something's synthetic or not, we're a lot more tuned to the voice subtleties than we are to the visual subtleties, which is, I guess, a little bit of a surprise for me to learn this. And yeah, that makes sense. So on the voice, you do take a lot more time. Let me ask you a different question. Can you do real time? Once you've gotten the voice and the acting or the visual, could you, in theory, put another voice and another actor on me while I'm talking? If it transcribes on the other side, can you take that transcription in real time and convert it?
So of course, real time is something we aspire to, but we're not there yet with the technology. Because we're actually generating from text. So just processing your voice to text will kill this real-time aspiration. It will take a few seconds, and then you won't be in sync.
No, but I'm just saying near real-time. Google, for example, right? They provide that.
I thought you wanted in perfect sync, for example.
No, I'm just saying I guess my question is more towards the navigating the where can this go in the future, long-term, but it sounds really interesting. For example, I'm just imagining the three of us talking here, and in quasi-real-time, this goes and takes on different avatars with representing the three of us. Wow.
So it's definitely coming. It's definitely coming, and it's coming fast.
I have a little bit of a different question on another angle, actually. What you've done here is created a marketplace. It's a two-sided marketplace. So you have the e-commerce businesses, and then on the other side, you have actually people, real-life people that you're getting on board to your system. What is it like for them? Who are those people that want to create videos? How do you compensate them, really? And what is their incentive?
Yeah, so a lot of people are, they just want to get paid and be famous and appear on things. And what we're actually building is this marketplace. And we are now in development and we'll open it in the future. I can't really say when. It's just in early stage of development. But people will actually can manage their personas and digital presence in the videos, and then they can affiliate themselves with certain things they want to affiliate themselves. For example, with a certain coffee you drink, and if this coffee needs video, or if you like a certain sports team or anything else, you can affiliate yourself with them and then appear in their content to the audience interests that you are interesting to. So everything we are actually, what we're creating is actually a separation layer between the faces and voices that promote content of any organization or community. And then we give people the ability to affiliate themselves with those types of content. So this is the marketplace we're building. Today, we actually have in place really complex contracts because it's so early with this technology, and people are actually acknowledging they will appear in content that is, of course, dignified. And of course, we opt out everything that we don't think is worthy of those people appearances. And we have it built into the contract. And then we compensate them for every video they created with them. And of course, they can remove themselves from the system at any time. We have some exceptions. If they were chosen to lead a campaign, for example, they have to give a specific agreement to the length of this campaign and stuff. So the legal issue is very, very complex. And this is actually another thing that we solved in a really elegant way, in the way that people can actually get compensated for their likeness. And this is a field that is going to grow more and more, we believe. So we also think we do very important work in this thing.
What exactly? You're saying it's very elegant in what way?
Yeah, so we work with a few companies worldwide, legal attorneys, legal offices, and try to understand the different laws about likeness and copyright and model release and tailored it to what we need and to those new kinds of content that's actually created, with people not actually saying the words they are saying, but actually agreeing to appear in things they're never said.
And we spoke earlier about how when you started, it was more of a blue ocean. And I can only imagine, like anything in the world, once something's out, like these spot instances on AWS, who is your competition? And how are you navigating that world in what's expected to be, it sounds, a lot more red ocean-y going forward?
Yes, so our competition is in a few fields, definitely in the field of synthetic characters, in digital avatars, 3D digital avatars, which are also becoming more and more relevant. And then other players that do video, for example, video without characters, but do offer dynamic videos for those types of businesses. But we really focus on character-centric videos, where you need this human touch, that we call it, bring back to the online experience. That, for example, you're entering a shop, first you're browsing, and then you want to call this salesperson just to ask a question. And we want to bring back this human touch to the online experience, basically.
Very, very Westworldish. If you haven't seen that yet, which I think you haven't, because you told me, spoke earlier about what your favorite series were, but you should definitely watch Westworld, because you're playing right in that field the way that I see it, if you take it a little bit forward. I'm still curious, going back to your early days, how long did it take before you were able to raise money for this? Because I know you raised $5 million. What was your journey towards that? Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, we started working in stages towards this. Both me and Oren, we both had other jobs going on, and we started growing this baby slowly. And then I think once we founded the company, it was February 19, we felt really strongly that we can raise and we're going to do it. And then it actually, we ended up raising after 3 months. But we started meeting investors before the company was founded, just to feel the reactions and get some feedback. And I think it took maybe 6 months or something in the ballpark.
Okay, well, let's get to the fun corner. Leo, find something different than what you're doing right now. And we just want to get a flavor for your creativity. Something you love and just create it from scratch.
I think education definitely needs a reboot. The way the education system works, it's always been an interesting notion to me to think generations ahead. And I think the standards by the Industrial Revolution for public education is totally not working. I think COVID is accelerating this change. And I definitely like to see myself build something for this new medium. I hope people are going to go back to the classrooms, but I think they can take some stuff back from the online experience that they have learning remotely, and then change the way that we learn, and not necessarily remembering and more information and doing tests. So I think definitely some product in this field is interesting to build. I think I would like to see more collaborative work. And definitely, I think we can avoid computers and interfaces are changing. I think project-based learning could be really interesting. Oh, and that people have tasks that they have to collaborate together. We can prepare them really good with either computers or even crafts and stuff like that. Just making groups and making project-based learning, displaying. It's really easy today to use the internet to deploy things. And it's getting more and more friendly. And I think...
Yeah, so the whole concept of, instead of learning and then doing, you're saying, hey, why don't we just do both at the same time? Because we've evolved to that stage right now. Maybe there's a way to sort of filter through so that people are learning and building simultaneously. And...
Exactly.
Great. So, well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed this conversation. Any way to reach you?
Sure. So I'd love if you reach me on LinkedIn, Lior Hakim, CTO of R1. It's easy to find. And yeah, we are actually hiring and looking for engineers that are passionate about data and tangible results, which we think is a very unique to us. So you can actually be really deep into the data and architecture and tuning, and then see immediate results in video of real life people. I think it's really cool.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Neil. And we're done.